Let's do bookmarks. We do it each Wednesday. We've done it each Wednesday for pretty much as long as I've been doing the show, which is must be almost 5 years now, 5 or 6 years. And this week we are very lucky because we've got the super busy and multi-talented Moana Maniapoto with us. Hello.
Hi, Jesse.
Nice to have you in.
Oh, nice to hear that people are saving their water too. I'm out on Muriwai Beach.
Yeah.
And there's a little meltdown there because we can't actually get water. So we've always had that bowl in the sink, you know, to catch water and then put it on the garden. And I never really was conscious of it until I moved there probably about 8 years ago from Grey Lynn, where we just, you know, drown. I had a bath nearly every night. So, but yeah, we can't get any water. So I think the next time we might be able to get it is the end of March. She's
what
brown
do you mean
out
you
there.
What do you mean you can't get
any
water?
Oh, so we're on rain tank water and everyone's booked up.
So what do you do?
Don't flush the wharepaku. Yeah, go and have a shower at my son's house in Mount Eden. Yeah, just been really conscious.
Yeah, and loads of people.
Hoping to skank a bit of water from our neighbours when their tank comes in, and then we'll swap some out.
Hey, yeah. Moana does so much. Still a singer, songwriter, and performer. You're performing at Splore this weekend.
Yeah.
She hosts
on Friday
a weekly current affairs show on Māori TV called Te Ao with Moana. New album on the way. She's got this doco series, The Negotiators. So thanks again for spending half an hour or so with us. Maybe we could start with Splore. Have you done that festival before?
No, I haven't. But Paddy Free, my wingman, who's part of my band and, of course, more well-known for being one half of Pitch Black, he's done it before. So I've got to find the place because apparently I've only been out there once where they host that festival. I went out there to see Childish Gambino play 2018.
You got tickets?
I got tickets. Because a friend of a friend had them, and I went out to the Pōhiri for him. It was a fantastic concert, but I remember thinking, God, it's a bloody long way out here.
Hey, sorry, Pōhiri, is that a dialect
pronunciation? I think some say Pōhiri and some say Pōhiri. I'm not quite sure which one I'm meant to say from Te Aroha.
Oh, sweet, okay. And so, yeah, you're almost halfway to Te Aroha by the time you get to Splore. Tell us about the sort of music you're making.
Oh, okay. So six songs. I've got five of them finished. And they are collaborations with Indigenous female artists from around the world. So we released one last year. So I have a Taiwanese woman who lives in the hills outside Taipei, Inca Mibing. I have an Indigenous Australian artist, Shelley. Morris, Scottish woman, sings in her language. Māori Boyne, who I met at WOMAD, who's probably one of the most famous Sami singers. And Jani Lelson, who is Indigenous or First Nations Canadian. And so these songs are all karakia, written by Scotty Morrison. And Paddy and I, Paddy does a lot of the music and I try and be useful. And so they're in their reel and in our reel, and it's fantastic. And then I thought, why don't I try and do some music videos with them? Well, that's just such a mission.
So are they over for this festival?
No, they're all around the world. Uh-huh. The only one that I was there, actually I went up to Taipei to record Inca in her home. She's got this kind of yoga studio. She's very beautiful. She's about 68 or something, and, you know, she lives on persimmons and things like that.
Like Beyonce's cayenne and honey diet or whatever it was.
Oh my
this is the persimmon diet.
Yeah. And then pomegranates, that's what it was. And then I was up in Finland for a film festival where I recorded Māori Boy, and she came across for that. So, yeah, it's choice. But logistically it was a bit of a stupid idea, really.
We might change this order up, Sam. Can you get two ready for us? So I'm really keen to hear a bit of this, and you also mentioned the, sort of the electronic element of it.
Yeah, so this woman I met when we played at a festival in Toronto. And she's an award-winning artist, something to do with Sesame Street and puppets and things like that, an actor and a playwright, but also the most extraordinary voice. And when she stood on stage next to us and was a guest artist on one of my songs, we nearly fell off the stage. Her voice is incredible. So, yeah. And this song is about the traditional Māori rite of I go, it's cleansing, I suppose. A Pākehā term would probably be like a baptism. So yeah, it's a sprinkling of water.
And the name of the project is Two, and is this the name of the song as well?
That's the name of the song,
okay,
yes.
Let's listen to some of it. RNZ National 2 featuring Moana Maniopoto and guests. Sounds great.
She's cool, eh? I really want to kind of rip in and start singing along with her, but I probably shouldn't.
Yeah, it's wicked. How's the reaction been for people to this track? And
well, we've
project?
Only played it a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to trot out some other of the collaborations on Friday night at Splore.
Yeah. And if people are looking for it, can they find it on streaming platforms, that sort of thing?
I think so. I think they can find Two, that particular song. Yeah, I'm a bit vague on that stuff.
Okay. Hey, tell me about this TV program, Te Ao with Moana.
Oh, so
when I read about this, I saw the press release, I was like, what a perfect host for a perfect show.
Oh, cripes, thanks. I did a pilot last year for Māori Television and I hadn't done current affairs. I'm a documentary maker, so we do the long game. We kind of like, you know, I spent ages doing interviews and ages editing. And for current affairs, it's kind of like I'm just learning that it can change every 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's why it's current. So I had a very strong imposter syndrome last year because I thought, well, I'm not a journalist. And then towards
you always have, can I say, quite strong views about what you hear on RNZ, and sometimes
I
move to contribute your thoughts.
I do. I do, but I do listen to you guys a lot.
So, yeah. You know, you have some expertise, but yeah, you just got a chance to try it out yourself.
Yeah, and it is a real privilege to interview people from all different walks of life. They might be community leaders or politicians. They're always a little bit more challenging.
Yeah.
Because they stick to the script pretty much, eh?
Yeah.
So this year we've got another runaround, and my son has come across from Marae. He's quite a neat reporter. He's done some great stories. He's broken some stories as well around Taika Waititi and different interesting things. He's just got this gift of being able to get people to trust in him.
What's his name?
Well, according to the father, his name is Hikurangi Jackson, and according to the Manyapuro side, it's Kimiora Jackson. So for anybody else, it's boy. But I'll tell you, the weird thing is that one of the other reporters that's joining us, her name is Kimiora Kairi Melbourne. So there's two Kimioras at the table, and it gets even more odd, they both have the same birthday and they're both good mates. Mm. So I'm having to refer to my son by the name that the Jackson whānau call him. So that's just how you roll in those situations. And we have Sarah Hall, who's a well-known investigative journalist, who's just, you know, got a great eye and ear for stories. Yeah. And, you know, so that's nice. It's very challenging.
I have to ask, is Kimiora Melbourne related to the great Hirini?
Yes, yeah. yes, she would be. Yeah, okay. And fluent speaker of Te Reo, so she's going to help me in my little journey.
One thing about doing current affairs or something like current affairs is you tend to just do it and then forget about it. But I will ask, are there any stories that you have really enjoyed over the first season of the show?
Oh, God. Well, you know, I just came off the back of a tour. I remember episode one, off the back of the tour, and they said, interview the Prime Minister about the budget. And I thought, God, I'm so useless on numbers. Mm. But I swatted up as much as I could, and I understood the key issues for Māori. So I quite enjoyed that that opportunity to sort of sit down and sort of, you know, ask questions of someone who's in charge, you know.
Yeah, honestly.
Isn't that amazing?
Anyone can become an expert on anything in 20 minutes, Moana. That's my view.
Well, the last episode was fun too, because it was the art of activism. Mm-hmm. So we tracked down some young activists who've been going out to Ihu Mātou, a whānau of activists, little climate crisis activists, as well as going back to interview the likes of Donna Awatere and Hone Harawira and Ken Mia. And, you know, that was amazing for me, because I don't see Donna that often, but she was very much a role model for me when I was young. I just thought, oh my God, she's so brainy and so articulate. So I enrolled to become an educational psychologist. Oh. Didn't make it, but, you know.
Yeah, no, it's cool to be in a position where you're meeting your heroes and get to put some questions to them, yeah.
And you have to try not to fan.
You don't say it straight away. You wait till the interview is done and then you say, oh, by the way.
By the way, I stalked you.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Maybe that's what I'll do with you at 3 p.m. today. I have to jump out for a second. This might interest you as a current affairs nut. Former National MP and now independent Jamie Lee Ross has been named as one of the four people facing serious fraud office charges in relation to two 100,000 donations made to the National Party. This is coming through from the RNZ political team. Jane Patterson, the political editor. The three others are Auckland businessman Yukun Zhang, Shijia Zheng and Hengjia Jing. More on our website, rnz.co.nz, and we'll cover it in the 3 p.m. bulletin too.
I asked Paula Bennett about that the other day.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that was when the New Zealand First stuff was all breaking. Mm-hmm. I said, are they toast? And she's like, oh, yeah. And then I said, well, your lot are not too hot either, eh? And she says, oh, no. It was something classic, like, no National Party MPs have been charged or something. It was like, oh, yeah, okay, we're, you know, fudging it a bit.
You know Paula's in a good mood when she winks at you during the interview.
She's got that stare, though, eh?
Yeah.
She's got that little thing in her eye, and you think, oh, yeah. Okay.
I'm speaking with Moana Maniapoto, and she's in for Bookmarks to talk about a few of her favourite things. And one of them is Māori Made Easy by Scotty Morrison.
I know.
So this guy, I met him when I was working at TVNZ, and he was so impressive. You know, he's just got something about him. He's tall and he's got a beautiful voice, and his reo is incredible.
Yeah.
Particularly for a non-native speaker like me to listen to. And now you're collaborating with him on Karakia as well.
Oh, well, Scotty's been a foundation member of my first band, Wine and the Moor Hunters. He's a good mate of my brother, Maru's. And when I first met Scotty, his reel was probably worse than mine, actually. And then, well, I mean, obviously he's taken off. He's writing books and dictionaries. So I sort of got to the end. And so he's always been a collaborator of mine on my albums. And he's just very accessible. He's been wonderfully generous with his time. But I decided this year that, you know, I've only spoken Māori to my kids, and my daughter's 11 now. And I thought, geez, I sort of dropped the ball a bit. So you get to a certain point, and I mean, I can do interviews, I can talk to the teachers, I only speak Māori to my daughter, but I get a bit confused on some of the grammar. So I thought, I was talking to Scotty and Stacey, and they said, oh, I said, I keep dropping out of classes, and I'm, you know, I can't stick with anything. They said, try this Māori Made Easy, which I'd heard about ages ago. You only have to do half an hour a day. I thought, well, how hard is that? Well, actually, it's quite challenging, but when I miss a day, I just don't beat myself up on it. And I'm just, I went so far, and then I thought, geez, this is blooming hard. I'll go right back to the start and pick up some of those grammatical things that I need to focus on. And I'm actually enjoying it. So I get my daughter to test me as we're driving down the Northwestern Motorway. And she's really rapt that I'm, you know, focusing on it. And, yeah, Scotty writes it in a really engaging way. So he's got this whole series, eh, of books, workbooks. So my son's onto that now. He's a good speaker.
I've got a link to a website on their tangata called Pimp My Reo.
Oh, that's me. I wrote that.
Oh, right. Okay.
Pimp My Reo. Yeah. Yeah. So that's just really. And you know what? I sort of scribbled that one night and it just went out there because there are so many people in that position that are time poor, that have memories like sieves, that can't stick to classes. And I just get people stopping me and say, that's me, that's me. And I think that they liked the fact that I was coming out of the closet about my my reo, you know, that I struggle with it. So that kind of, so heaps of people have been saying on Facebook and that, okay, that's me. I'm going to give it a shot this year. So, yeah.
What is your view on the health of reo in sort of the wider context of society? Are you encouraged by how many people are enthusiastic about learning it at the moment? Are we in danger of taking it for granted?
I think there's a lot more Pākehā champions, which is awesome. A lot of people embrace it. They see it as something that's empowering and fabulous. I still think that as a mother of a child that needs to be in total immersion, it's a struggle still to find teachers. And, I mean, we do a 72-kilometre round trip every day to get our daughter to Pasadena, she's at now. She was at Westmere before. They're just, where we live, there just weren't any places where they're teaching it to, you know, a great depth.
So you don't have a choice?
No. And then you have to, you know, beg and grovel. Can I get in here, please? Because I'm so out of zone. I still think that it is really debilitating the way that Māori media is forced to kind of prioritise te reo as part of its content. You know, Pākehā media doesn't have that kind of statutory requirement. Mm. So iwi radio and Māori television have to put out something like 10 hours of reo a day. So, you know, that's a really big thing when you're trying to be entertaining, when you're trying to be current affairs, political, advocate. You have to actually whack into reo. So can you imagine what that would be like if RNZ had to do that?
Yeah.
You know, and at the same time, we don't have te reo compulsory in the schools. So, you know, so radio and Māori television are meant to do the job.
reminds
of saving the language.
Reminds me a bit of that music quota situation in the 90s where, you know, I'm not going to pay 20% music quota if the other radio stations don't have to. And then after a while people just fall in love with New Zealand music and the quota becomes a kind of an irrelevance, hopefully.
Yeah, well, Iwi Radio and Māori TV have to.
Yeah.
It's part of their funding. So, you know, we need to – it's great that RNZ is putting a lot of time in terms of pimping the reel of their presenters. But they need to RNZ could become a very powerful advocate for supporting iwi radio and Māori television to get their funding lifted, actually. Mm-hmm. I know it's a challenging environment, but that's a double banger and it's a huge responsibility.
Another book you wanted to talk about was Dick Scott's Ask That Mountain. I remember this being in my mum's bookcase, although I never read it. Tell us about this book.
Oh, you know, I remember reading that book when I was at law school and feeling totally ripped off that I didn't know this stuff, that I wasn't taught about Taranaki and Parihaka when I was at school. That's just how it was. You'd like to think that things have changed, eh? And so when we were doing, so that was kind of like this huge eye-opener, and I revisited that when we were doing our negotiators series looking at treaty settlements, and we interviewed Jamie Tuta, who was a lead negotiator for Taranaki Iwi, and he shared with us, you know, the history of wars, a scorched earth policy that was enacted in Taranaki, the wars that started in Te Atiawa, the terrible legislation that was brought in, where prisoners could be, people could be arrested and put in prison without trial. So, you know, human rights were suspended. So we talked that all through during our documentary series. And then, so I took the, you know, the academic learning of that book that I, you know, I'd no way of anticipating I'd be talking to someone about that and the personal impact that had on their whānau and their tribe years later.
Do you remember your emotional response to reading that book?
Oh, I was really upset, you know. Did you ever read it yourself?
No, I haven't got to it. Like I say, it was in our family, but I was probably too young for it then, but I'd love to go back to it.
Yeah, and
remember that image on the front.
I know. And, you know, I think you know, when someone said to me, can you talk about books on bookmarks, which makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I've spent most of the last year reading deeds of settlement, you know, from the tribunal.
For the negotiators,
yeah. And the most amazing history that's captured in those. I mean, when they get the curriculum nailed in terms of history, that's where they want to go first because all the tribes have piled it all in there. In fact, I was on the Chatham Islands on Friday.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. Jeez. And I
went there this time last year.
Did you?
Yeah.
What were you doing over there?
So I was various things. I was meeting with the Moriori, our local iwi there, finding about their story.
With Maui.
Listening to a bit of te re.
Yeah. Yes, ka pai, te imi.
Yeah, the Chatham's so windy they've blown the vowels off the te reo.
It's windy, eh? It's cold over there.
And I was looking at some of Air New Zealand's projects over there, putting carbon credits on the island. But anyway, you were there,
nice.
Why?
Nice. Yeah. I went over on Hercules, so I felt quite flash.
Yeah.
And so they signed their deed of settlement as part of their treaty settlements. They got $18 million. Which, you know, just seems so little, you know, when
you
look at
the Did you visit their marae over there?
Yeah. I've been, that's my third time. So I've slept in that marae, which is really lovely. Oh.
And they've got that thing up the centre, which lists all the names. the thing.
Jeez.
I was just remembering because they sang me a song and I was by myself and they said, and now it's your turn to return the song.
Don't you love that moment? So they were saying goodbye the other day and Maui, he does the old side slip. He's like, ah, yes, and after our farewell we'll have Moana, she'll sing a song. He's like, oh.
So the Po has
all the names
of people who were, massacred, tortured massacred, basically. Yeah.
So Minister Andrew Little apologised on behalf of the Crown unreservedly, he said, for not protecting Moriori from slavery. But also, the other thing that he apologised was for the official contribution that the Ministry of Education gave to stigmatising Moriori through saying in school journals that they were a weak, inferior people and extinct. So that whole kōrero went beyond the education system, you know, in 1946, right out to media, and it's still continued to be used as a sort of an excuse for colonisation. And you shut up, you Maoris over there, because you know you killed off the Moriori.
The same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it began at the funeral of Maui's grandfather, wasn't it?
Tommy Solomon.
Yeah, Tommy, they said the last member of the Moriori race.
It's always dangerous when you start talking about the last of anything, because how can it be the last? I mean, they're still there. Maui's still there. He's had kids. They're still going, but you know,
beautiful kids.
So. Oh yeah, yeah. So that was it was really special, and they have lovely food over there, eh?
Oh, yeah. I went and got 2 kilos of blue cod from the local fishery, and then brought it back on the plane.
I love that. Isn't it great? You don't have to go through customs when you come back. I think that blue cod is the best.
Yeah,
it's really beautiful.
But harder to find crayfish than I expected it would be. But never mind.
They're huge. They're like the size of small puppies.
Yeah, I think they'll get exported. Hey, let's play another track of your choice. We'll probably just get to chance one. So D'Angelo or Childish Gambino?
Oh, God. Oh, D'Angelo, because I just play this all the time just to chill out. And my son hooked me onto this one. I saw in the credits that my old mate Cyril Neville was playing cowbell on there, so I'm going to listen to it again.
On this track?
Yeah. And Daniel Lenoir was on the was a producer, but I love this because I would never have picked that this was D'Angelo, and it's just a really relaxing track. He is so cool.
It's called Unshaken.
Did I hear a thunder? Did I hear you break? I can't quite remember just what guided me this way. Oh, unshaken, amidst the crash of the world. The pines, they often whisper, they whisper what no tongue can tell. He who drinks from the deep water, have you seen where that crossroads, where you been? I once was standing tall, now I feel my back's against the wall. Stand unshaken. It's the crash of the world. May I stand unshaken amidst the crash of the world. To me, as you once did, but I could not see And I don't wonder, as a wayward soul, will the hunter be haunted by the swamp and gold? Oh, stand unshaken. Amidst the crash of a world.
RNZ Nationalist Angelo, chosen by Moana Maniapoto, who is our guest on Bookmarks. Thank you, Moana, says someone on text, for welcoming me to Te Reo. I saw Moana's TV show. She's fantastic. Gave Paula Bennett a hard time. I loved it. Someone says, this is a bit of a tangent, but I'll share it with you for your thoughts. Bill English was the most fluent Māori speaker in Parliament, but was never given any credit, maybe because he was national. Thoughts?
I never knew that.
No, it's neither.
Oh, no, hang on. What was he the most fluent what?
Most fluent Māori speaker in Parliament.
Oh, come on. What are those, all those other Māori there? Oh, please.
Okay. Jeez. No, yeah, can't yeah, sell no. that one. Sorry, Eleanor. Thanks for the text, though. 2101. Hey, when you're not on TV, what do you like to watch on TV?
Oh, you know, I'm a bit of a slacker, but I've been watching things with my daughter. So we're watching like Lock and Key and all these spooky little things, that Stranger Things. But I love those big series like Peaky Blinders. Peaky
yeah.
Blinders.
We haven't got to that yet. Tell us about it.
You would have watched it, eh?
No.
Really?
That's what I mean. We haven't got to it.
Ah, and I, because I think I'm the only person who never watched Game of Thrones. You would have watched that, eh?
Yeah, we got to that one.
Yeah, no, I couldn't understand. It's too much.
Oh, well, that's sort of how I feel about period dramas, you know, like I'm sure I'd enjoy it, but I find it off-putting.
But Peaky Blinders, they have got the coolest music.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of like Nick Cave or something, mm-hmm. and then they have
Gothic.
The best fashion, because it's just after World War One. And if, I would really love to be Polly, who is the gangster lady, and she has the bestest outfit. Cillian Murphy is the lead head dude of the Peaky Blinders gang, who kind of very criminal gang from Birmingham. I tell you who else popped up. Oh, what's this? Oh, my
We've
God.
We've got Paul
my
Anderson.
Favorite.
Not Sam Neill.
Sam Neill did pop up. Oh, he was a bit of a tortured soul. Now there was a guy that was, he was playing a very criminal Jewish leader.
Okay.
Someone will remember
2101 if someone wants to.
Tom Hardy.
Right.
I'll watch anything with Tom Hardy.
Tough guy.
Yeah. So it's just an amazing, I guess a whole experience of kind of drama, crime, politics, fashion, music, beautifully shot, very gritty. That was my favourite one.
And then there's Borgen.
You have seen that one, eh?
Nah.
Jeez, I thought I'm the only one who hasn't seen anything. Borgen is a...
Has it got subtitles?
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tough sell in my house, sorry.
Well, we did a power watch in my house. We sort of did it like over two nights until our eyes fell out. And that is a Danish political drama which is centred around a female Prime Minister, Birgit, and I tell you, I reckon all the politicians in New Zealand, a lot of them would have watched this because it focuses on her as the leader, but also her spin doctor and their relationship with the media. And the spin doctor is in a relationship with a key journalist.
Oh, yeah.
And it just kind of makes you think about all the different dynamics that happen in that political landscape. Mm. And she's very, very gorgeous, very, she has to hold together a kind of a coalition government, so that's kind of fascinating. But, yeah, I'd recommend that for people who haven't seen it.
There's a book I wanted to mention, Destined to Witness, Growing Up Black in Nazi Germany by Hans Massakoy. That sounds pretty heavy.
It was a musician that I met who was based in Germany, a Nigerian musician, Adir. He gave me a whole bunch of books when I was touring. He said, take these home. And that book is the most amazing thing, because there's this kid in 1993. He's got a white German mother, and his father is a diplomat from Liberia, and he's growing up just when Hitler is just starting to come into, you know, into prominence. So the kid wants to, the kids all get taken along to some Hitler thing where the Führer is going to be talking, and they all get caught up in the uniforms, the pageantry, the, you know, the passion of this man speaking. And so they all want to join the Hitler Youth Movement. He wants to join. He's black. And
true story.
This is true. This is his autobiography. He wants to join, and they won't let him. And his mother, his white German mother, who hated the Nazis, went down to the headquarters to try and advocate for the rights of her son to join, her black son to join the Hitler Youth Movement. And he never kind of came, he never got in there.
Yeah.
But the whole story is about his survival as one of the few blacks in Hamburg. And he was kind of lucky that, for him, that the Nazis were kind of targeting, you know, the Jewish community and others. He was extremely visible. And so the story talks about how you cope when you're the only one. You're the only one, and you're trying to duck and not be visible. And then he goes back to Africa, to the home of his father, when he survives the war. He goes to the States. He becomes a paratrooper for the U.S. Army in Korea. The funny thing that he said was that when he was rejected from the Hitler Youth Movement, but they tried to sign him up for a soldier later on, you know, when the war broke out, and he didn't make it because he was too underweight. Anyway, he goes to America. He studies journalism, and he's a journalist for 40 years, and he ends up being the editor of Ebony, a top magazine. He died in 2013, and it's a remarkable story. So he was inspired by Alex Haley to write that book.
Author of Roots, and that book is called Destined to Witness, that we've been talking about. We're out of time. Moana Maniapoto, you can catch her on Te Ao on Māori television. Is that
Te Ao with Moana on Māori television?
Details.
8 o'clock on a Monday, or just scour Facebook or something. We've got a Facebook page.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you've got a new album called Ono on the way.
Ono, yes, Ono.
Which is your sixth album, of course.
Oh, no, getting in there, eh?
Yeah.
Might make to double digits. Who knows?
Hey, kia ora.
Thank you, Jesse. It's lovely to come in and talk to you. Thank you for having me in today.
Yeah, lovely to have you. That's Moana Maniapoto.